Well, whether it's a marsh, a bog, a fen, or a swamp, we are surrounded. Many, many wetlands here in Wisconsin. That's a good thing. We're losing a lot of them, unfortunately. But we still have many left. They're a critical habitat for many creatures and serve important functions. Oh, for example, they're natural filters for our watersheds. Larry Mueller here. Really glad to have you along today. On the Ideas Network, we're very lucky to have a great organization like the Wisconsin Wetlands Association helping to educate the public and policymakers about the importance of wetlands, and certainly they work to actively protect them as well. Katie Belfus is the Outreach Programs Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. She's been a guest on the show many times.
Thanks, Larry. It's always an enjoyable time.
It's great to have you back. And do you often get to appear with your husband?
This is a first, and it's very fun and exciting.
Okay, cool. Well, Rich Belfus is CEO and president of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. And the reason they're together is he's one of the featured speakers at the upcoming Wisconsin Wetlands Conference. And Rich, great to have you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And, you know, February 2nd is Wetlands Day. That's a national...
It's an international thing, actually. International. It's sponsored by the Ramsar Convention on Wetlands, so it's World Wetlands Day on February 2nd. And it seems like a kind of a strange day to celebrate wetlands because it's cold and snowy, but...
It's Groundhog Day.
It is Groundhog Day, too. But it was the day that they signed the Convention on Wetlands in 1970, so that's why they picked February 2nd. And it's a good opportunity to just take a break from winter and talk about wetlands.
We often get questions about what exactly constitutes a wetlands area. Maybe you could explain that, Katie.
Sure. It's three simple factors they're simple, but they come together in a variety of different ways. It's whether there's water at or near the surface for all or part of the year, whether there's wetland soils, there's certain kind of soils that develop in wetland conditions, and whether there's the presence of wetland-loving plants that have special adaptations to deal with those environments.
So that's...
And the trick is the temporality of it, that sometimes there's areas that are wetland, that are wet, that have standing open water or even just mushy ground at some parts of the year, and other parts of the year are dry as a bone. But they're still wetlands, and there's many different kinds of wetlands, and they look different, and they have their water operates differently on the landscape. But they are all very critical to our, as you pointed out, our natural resources in general.
I haven't done it yet. I want to give our listeners a chance to chime in here. You can join in. If you have a question, maybe... You have a question about wetlands in your area? Do you know how to protect your own wetlands? What concerns you about preserving them? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well at talk@wpr.org. And don't be afraid to go to my Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a photo. Maybe you got a nice wetland photo, or certainly a question or comment. You can post it right there at the Larry Mueller Show website. And Rich, of course, you're directing the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. You're speaking at the Wisconsin Wetlands Association banquet. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, I'm going to give a talk called Seven Wetlands, Seven Watersheds. And really what we're talking about in the theme of this great conference coming up is about the strong connection between wetlands, which we love, and the broader landscapes that maintain them. So I'm a hydrologist by training. I've been sort of sitting in the CEO role for a few years, but I spent a lot of years with ICF focused on watersheds, focused on wetland water and the environment and how it affects wetlands. And we do a lot of work up at the Crane Foundation doing prairie restoration and savanna restoration and really trying to teach those landscape connections, how farmlands connect to wetlands, how prairies and how the natural landscape of Wisconsin differed in the way it interacted with wetlands from our present agricultural landscape and all those sorts of things. So we're really focused on those bigger connections, and lots of critters need them. Turtles and frogs and all kinds of species need to move between wetlands and those uplands. And so,
and those cranes. Connection.
Absolutely. Yep. So,
and I'm certain they play, cranes play, wetlands play a role in crane conservation. Excuse me. Yeah.
And in many ways, they're sensitive to changes in wetlands, and they're flagships. People care about cranes, and it helps them care more about wetlands and our landscapes.
Tim wondered on a Facebook question if you could talk about the wetland prairie around Avoca, Wisconsin.
I'm embarrassed to say it's been a few years since I've been there, but it's a beautiful place right on the Lower Wisconsin Riverway. It's part of our Lower Wisconsin Riverway Wetland Gem. We have Wisconsin Wetlands Association's recognized 100 different high-quality wetland sites around the state to just help folks connect with wetlands that may or may not be in their community or places where they're recreating. And Avoca Prairie is part of that area, and it's a fabulous wet prairie right along the Wisconsin River there.
Hmm. Phil in Oshkosh wondered in an email if we're able to really create a wetland to replace an existing wetland that has been eliminated because of, you know, something we people did. Is it a matter of just adding water, or a whole lot more difficult than that?
Well, that's a great question, Phil. Thank you so much for it. And it's an important part of this conference that we're putting on in another couple of weeks, Great Wetlands, Healthy Watersheds, because while the science of wetland restoration is developing and growing, and we are getting better at learning more about how wetlands work, we don't know yet how to make wetlands the same way that nature makes wetlands. Partly that's we haven't been around for long enough that many wetlands have taken tens of thousands of years to develop over time, and we can try to replicate those conditions, but we simply can't. And when we talk about losing wetlands that help recharge our groundwater, we can't create those conditions, and we need all the right bedrock and the right soil conditions for those things to happen. So we can try, and we do try, and often that's we do create marshes, for example, are one of the most commonly created wetland types. But I'd like to meet somebody who can recreate a coniferous bog, for example. I'd like to see that happen on the landscape. So that one of the important things is recognizing that all wetlands are not the same, that they are different, and that they exist in different parts of our landscape because of the conditions in that particular space. So you can't make that same wetland somewhere else because those same conditions aren't there.
So that coniferous bog, you're knocking out a 100-acre coniferous bog, you're not going to replace that.
No, sir.
And a great example is Avoca Prairie, the question a minute ago. That's such a unique wetland. It has these ridges and swales created by the Wisconsin River. And I always loved going out there because on the ridges you have prairie vegetation, and then you go into the swales and you have different wetland plants. Mm-hmm. It's such a unique wetland, and it's something we're not even close to being able to create. There are certain kinds of very simple-ish wetlands that people have gotten pretty good at, but these diverse and fascinating wetlands like Avoca, we're not even close to being able to recreate those.
Yeah. We have Ken in Verona who has a question for you. Hi, Ken. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. It's been a long time since I've called in. But
well, great to have you on.
Yeah. Thanks, Larry. Say, I don't really want to get bogged down, so to speak, no pun intended, in the mining bill. But the atmosphere in our state has changed with the new power that is in place right now. And I'm just wondering how you guys are preparing for what I perceive as a kind of a dark time in our history coming for environmental issues in our state. And how are you guys dealing with this? And what is your perception of all this?
All right. Good question. Katie?
Well, I think we go right back to the basics of our organization. We're a science-based organization, and so we go back to the science that we know and try to work to educate decision makers and the general public about ways that pending legislation or new policies do or don't agree with the science, and working with that approach rather than a real in-your-face kind of approach. We want to work collaboratively and use science as the basis for educating folks about the benefits or detriments of whatever is before us.
Okay. Can I ask another question, Larry? Totally different.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
You know, Obra Gardens is a wonderful place, but I also know that that was a huge wetland at one time.
Uh-huh.
Is there ever any thought of maybe part of, like, in the park area there? I know that would be really probably politically not that it wouldn't happen, but boy, you'd seem like that'd be a perfect place to try to restore at least a partial wetland.
Well, a lot of Wisconsin, a lot of Madison was built on wetland, and in my opinion, we need to look for the opportunities where we can protect wetlands that are still existing, like the wonderful wetlands in the Cherokee Marsh area, and make sure those are protected and that we don't continue to develop on those lands. Let's save those. I would love to see wetland restoration in other places, but we also have to balance that with other issues. And let's take care of what we've got before we go back to restoring stuff that's already been built upon. And I liked his comment about getting bogged down, because we actually have a little rule around our office to not use that phrase. You know, you get swamped with work or you get bogged down, and all that's very, it's actually derogatory to wetlands, right? So we walk around and say, oh, I'm feeling really paved over today, or I'm really, really filled in, just to try to change that. Because if we continue to promulgate this idea that wetlands are bad through our language, it actually does affect how we think about them.
Very interesting. Hadn't thought of it that way. That's a good approach. Linda in Pewaukee, hi.
Hello. I had a question about beaver and beaver dams on streams. Down in this territory, it seems like every time there's a beaver dam, it's taken out. And I know there's some issue with the destruction of trees and whatever, but I'm just wondering, what is your stance on, you know, beaver and whether they're helpful to streams and wetlands, or how they should be viewed? They seem much maligned, and yet they seem like they were once part of the natural scheme of things. So that's my question.
All right.
That's a great question, and they are much maligned, and I would say whether they are maligned or not depends on whose property is getting flooded. And certainly beavers are a natural part of our landscape historically, but as we have changed our land use, the problems that they cause, for lack of a better word, can be problematic for some landowners. They do create wetlands in some areas. They also flood out wetlands. There's some places where you might have shallow water and a beaver will come in and put in their dam, and suddenly you've got a high water area and those wetlands are flooded out. So it's, when we had a wide open landscape, that was not a big deal. You know, you had a matrix of things and it moved around. And as we have changed that and made open landscapes more rare, it just becomes more of a problem. And we've got, you know, landowner rights and all that that are important that we now value. So,
you know, it's been a lot of fun for me. And I hear I give away my age. I've been going, spending a lot of time in the Shawamigan National Forest, which is tens of thousands of acres, and in the same area over a 25-year period. And so I've had a chance to watch beaver dams come in and out of particular areas. And it's really quite interesting how over a 25, 30-year period, how the landscape changes.
And I should say there is a group of people, of scientists, who are looking at beaver and what the state programs are for the control or management of beaver and beaver dams, to try to look at where can we let those things happen and where do we need to be a little bit more involved, and what's the science, and is it problematic or not? So
yeah.
There's a group of folks looking at that.
Well, it is fun to be in a place where there are no other buildings, mm-hmm. and so there's, you know, we're miles off a road, and so you're able to really sort of watch nature at its, you know,
nature is not a static thing, that's for sure.
No, it isn't. It's a lot of fun to observe. Linda, thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much. Ron and Abrams, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Good morning. I want to kind of fill in where this other man was talking about the wetlands that are being damaged in Wisconsin.
Yes.
I see all different places where this is happening. The Green Bay Packers were given an okay to cover up half of wetlands or something that right along 41 down south of us here. Because they wanted to build a sports shop there. Of course, they're going to make another one someplace else. But also a big one is this Geovec Mining that wants to make this open pit mine up by the Lake Superior. Have you heard about that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That is, there was an article in the paper here last week, and they are giving them an okay to do almost anything they want to up there. They are, if they have to, they are, it's okay to destroy wetlands, in those words just about, and they have an okay to fill in wet riverbeds or whatever they have to do up there to get this mine in. And they are just disregarding any safety whatsoever. And you people should be at some of these meetings and getting some sense into their heads as to what they're talking about with these wetlands and things.
All right, Katie?
Well, I'm glad you're aware of the issue, and I'm happy to say that Wisconsin Wetlands Association was at the one hearing that was held last week on Wednesday. It was a 12-hour hearing, and our staff was there the entire time. Not me, but my colleagues whose work this is. And apparently it closed with, you know, hundreds of people yet to testify who weren't able to get their voices heard. But so there's a very well-organized effort to try to bring in some facts about conservation implications of the proposed legislation and the proposed project. And people are working day and night to help with that education process to try to say, look, it's not that we're anti-mining, but let's do it in a way that, as best as possible, recognizes the important resources that we have there that are such a strong draw for tourism in this state, which is one of our largest economic booms, you know, tourism. That's why people come to Wisconsin, beautiful yeah. Wisconsin. So it's many people are working on it. It's a very hard fight, but it's certainly one that is keeping people awake right now.
Ron, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. We're talking about the work of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association about World Wetlands Day. It's February 2nd, and the Wisconsin Wetlands Association annual conference coming up February 12th through the 14th in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. We'll get into some more details on that as well, and certainly look forward to your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about our Wisconsin wetlands today with Katie Belfus of the Wisconsin Wetlands Association and her husband Rich Belfus, CEO and president of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. He's one of the featured speakers at the upcoming Wisconsin Wetlands Conference in February 12th through the 14th. So great to have both of them here as we talk wetlands. You can join in again with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or again, go to my Facebook page. You can post at the Larry Mueller Show. Joe and Viroqua, appreciate your call. Thank you. And what's on your mind?
Yes, good morning, Larry. Another worthwhile program.
Thank you.
It's my opinion that destruction of an existing marsh for some commercial purpose and then going out and substitute by creating another marsh is one negative detriment to the environment. There's no way it should go. That's my opinion. And another thing, creating this iron mine up in northern Wisconsin to me is a crime. It's a crime against nature and also to the tourist business. I'm against both of that.
Well, thanks a lot for calling. And Katie, maybe you can talk a little about that.
Sure. I wanted to point out, following the last caller and this gentleman here, that the testimony that Wisconsin Wetlands Association provided last week as part of the hearing at the legislature is available on our website, which is wisconsinwetlands.org. And you should see right at the top of that main page a little link that you can click on to see what our testimony is, just to get some background about what we think the problems with that proposed legislation are. And generally speaking, why mitigation doesn't work when you're talking about removing the entirety of the top of a watershed. You can't remove the top of a watershed and expect that there won't be major impacts down the watershed, and you can't put those removed, destroyed wetlands somewhere else and expect that they will at all solve the problems that you caused by removing the top of the watershed to begin with. So if you're interested in getting some more information about our organization's position, I encourage you to visit our website at wisconsinwetlands.org to view that testimony.
Yeah, I think we've got a link on our Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you didn't get that down, just click there and you're in. Rich, did you want to comment
on that? Yeah, I think this is a really key idea. And whether or not you have wetlands in the upper part of the watershed or not, really the key there is these connections that we can't, if we love our wetlands, we can't go around destroying the lands around them, the lands that feed them with water or corridors for species to migrate in and out and so on. We've done, I think, a fantastic job, and this is in large part due to groups like Wisconsin Wetlands Association and many others. I think we've done a fantastic job raising awareness broadly about wetlands and the importance of wetlands. But I think the degree to which we connect those wetlands to ourselves and those landscapes to ourselves and understand how what we do wherever we are affects wetlands. We still have a long way to go on that. And I think when we see legislation like this on mining, and you might hear people saying, well, I'm not putting the mine in a wetland. It's, you know, it's upstream or something like that. In this case, some of the mines are actually in wetlands. But often you hear talk like that, or I'm cutting down this area, but it's not in the wetland. We're not making those kind of connections. And that's I need to do that. Right.
Yeah. Well, Joe, I thank you again. Appreciate it. Gail in Door County. On to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And And I really commend everyone who goes to fight for the environment and keeping everybody flying according to ordinances. But I have a real concern is with the Pacific Partners Treaty that has been really cloaked in secrecy. There's been things that have been leaking out that have me worried and concerned because Mr. Walker just made a trip to China. If foreign countries come in and want to do business and build and do things in the United States, they aren't necessarily going to have to follow the EPA environmental regulations, and if we make them, they can sue because we're keeping them from doing business. So they could actually be holding us over a barrel by threatening to sue us if we don't let them ravage our land. And I'm really concerned, and I'd like anybody's view on this, and if anybody isn't aware of it, that maybe we should be more aware of this on an international level rather than just being local. What do you guys any awareness on that?
All right, Katie?
Larry, I don't know about the project that she's referring to. My understanding, and again, I'm not our policy director, I'm our outreach programs director, so I'm speaking to the best of my abilities at this point, but my understanding is that when a project goes forth in Wisconsin and in the United States, they still need to follow the laws of the state and the nation. And there are rules and regulations under the Clean Water Act and other federal legislation, as well as our own wetland laws in the state, although they've changed in the last year. And I don't believe that a foreign corporation would be exempted from those if they want to do business in our landscape. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
A key thing there is we are a rapidly globalizing world, as we know, and we have American companies working in countries all over the world, and we have Chinese companies working in countries all over the world, and so on and so forth. And we're really only beginning to get our minds around what all that means, because different companies have different levels of protection on their landscape. And I've often heard mining companies argue that if we don't let them mine here in Wisconsin, they'll go destroy somewhere in Central America or somewhere else. You know, they'll go and develop elsewhere and take the business elsewhere. And I think it is a big issue. We need to understand how we're all affecting each other and make sure that we raise the overall standard of protection everywhere.
That's exactly right. And I think a lot of what our organization is trying to do in the education and outreach portion of our work is reach the general public and private landowners and local municipalities and help educate everybody about what the connections are between the communities, how protecting wetlands in your local community can actually help your community deal with more flooding or with water quality issues that you might be having, that wetlands are a tool to help your watershed health, and that we can't improve our community health without improving our watershed and wetland health.
Good points. And Gail, thank you so much for calling. Henry in Janesville, I want to give you a chance. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you. Certainly appreciate what is being done by Wisconsin Wetlands Group. I wanted to ask a question. What percentage of wetlands water actually gets converted to usable drinking water? I'm a member also of the local chapter of Ducks Unlimited, which is a large supporter and funder of wetland preservation, primarily for the purpose of sustaining habitat and providing resources that are rapidly being consumed. I'll take your information. Mm-hmm. Also wanted to comment that the South Central Wisconsin chapter of Ducks Unlimited is hosting their annual banquet February 21st at the Holiday Inn Convention Center. And it's another organization, obviously, that is a strong supporter of wetlands. So mm-hmm. Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Katie?
And Ducks Unlimited is a strong partner of ours and is one of the sponsors of our upcoming Wetlands Conference, February 12th through 14th. So we're always pleased to work with that organization. They do excellent work. And as you said, they fund a lot of wetland conservation, wetland restoration. So good stuff. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't know the answer of percentage of water from wetlands that goes to drinking water. I mean, all water is connected, right? So at some point or another, every 100%. But do you have an answer there?
Yeah, well, it's a little bit, I guess, the time scale you're looking at. But a lot of our water is drawn from deeper wells. But ultimately, that's water that seeped in over time. And a lot of it originally related to wetlands. Right now, there's relatively few communities probably drawing shallow water from wetland areas. But wetlands are source recharge lands, and they're certainly very, very important for that.
All right. Thanks again for calling, Henry. Appreciate it. Valerie in Maple, Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I live in Douglas County in the northwest corner of the state, and we do have wetlands. My concern is the impact on them of invasive plant species. We have reed canary grass, which is very bad. There's, of course, purple loosestrife, and there's a invasive cattail that we have up here, and I think these things are also statewide. My question is kind of two-pronged here. What is the impact of these invasives on the existing wetlands we have in the state, and what kind of remediation can be done to get rid of the impact of these invasive plant species on our wetlands?
Mm-hmm.
It's the $64,000 question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Invasive species are a huge problem. It's not only in northwest Wisconsin, I'm sad to say. It's throughout Wisconsin, throughout the United States, and in fact, throughout the world, because things that are invasive to us lived somewhere else before they came here, and we're sharing our plants with other parts of the world, too. I'm looking at Rich, because I know they deal with that around the globe in some
Absolutely.
Of their conservation efforts. And invasive species, to some degree, are kind of like a scab. They're an indication that there are other issues going on in that landscape, that there's too much sediment going on, there's too many nutrients going on. Sometimes that's the case, and that there are other problems that we need to try to ameliorate in order to address those invasive species problems. But fundamentally, the invasive species are, I'm sorry to say, here to stay. And there's some things we can do to control the density or to control the spread, certainly. And there's good work being done to try to be watching for species that are coming up from the south that are not here yet, because obviously things are much easier to get when they're in small patches as opposed to taking over your entire wetland. So there's a lot of good work being done on trying to figure out techniques for managing, but it's a very large problem.
Yeah, I would just add, I think it's much about picking our battles and trying to keep invasive species out of our most amazing wetlands, our most important ones. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to control them everywhere, but dedicated landowners with wetlands can make a huge mm-hmm. progress, not yeah. only for the wetlands that they have, but in keeping that seed bank from developing and spreading to other wetlands. And also, really, action on individual wetlands is incredibly important for people that
for sure.
can put in the time and effort to do that.
Yeah, I don't mean to imply it's not worth working on. I think it certainly is. It's just a very tricky problem.
Yep.
Well done.
Some friends in the Door County area who have property along the lake shore, and they just took it upon themselves of their area. They're going to keep that clean and the invasives out, and it's and they, you know, they spend a little bit of time. Actually, once they got it, their area kind of cleaned up, which took a little bit of work. Then after that, it's just like, all right, so we're going to spend mm-hmm. half hour here and an hour there. And it's just amazing. If you look at their property versus the properties on both sides of them, it's just like, oh, man.
Making a big difference.
You wish everybody could do that.
Yeah.
No, that's for sure. And it's a good tie-in to another program that's happening as part of our Wetland Science Conference in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing a screening of Green Fire, the film about Aldo Leopold and his life and the ways that his thinking and teaching has inspired others across the state and across the nation and even the world. So we welcome anyone from the general public to come in and watch that movie with us. It'll be screening on Tuesday evening, February 12th at about 6:30 at the Blue Harbor Resort in Sheboygan.
We should talk. We haven't really talked about the conference. So can we talk a bit
sure.
more about what's going on with that conference? Again, it's February 12th through the 14th.
That's correct. It starts Tuesday evening and it runs through Thursday afternoon. And this is our 18th annual conference. It's getting bigger and bigger by the year. And it's primarily an opportunity for wetland professionals and water professionals to get together to share the latest techniques and science that inform their work. But we do often have wetland enthusiasts from the general public coming and learning as well and sharing their ideas. And we have wetland field trips. We have 3 different field trips going out this year to showcase what's happening locally in the Sheboygan area. And a lot of terrific speakers. We have 2 symposiums this year, one on groundwater. Actually, we were just talking about groundwater, but we're going to be talking about the interactions between wetlands and groundwater, and one on planning at the watershed scale. What can communities do looking at watershed planning and protection in their own communities?
And we have a link on my Facebook page, but you can register online if you want to.
Certainly. And anybody's welcome to come to the entire conference, and in particular, the Tuesday evening film screening of the Greenfire movie, as well as the banquet on Wednesday evening that Rich is going to be the keynote speaker for, are both more particularly accessible to members of the general public.
And it's Great Wetlands, Healthy Watersheds.
Yeah, with great wetlands, you can have healthy watersheds, and healthy watersheds help make great wetlands. It's a double-sided coin.
That's right. And one of the things I love to do is make the connections between what's happening all over the world on these kind of issues and what's happening at home here. And what I'll be talking about is some really wonderful efforts on three different continents, actually, to connect watershed restoration to wetland restoration. And I like to think that our base here at the International Crane Foundation, our base here in Wisconsin, and good practice here in Wisconsin helps inspire people elsewhere in the world, and work that other people are doing helps inspire us to do better work here too. So we'll be talking about interesting efforts to restore water to wetlands in China, a place challenged by development much like here, and in Africa, and talk about invasive species and their link to watershed conservation and a lot of these issues, a little bit through the lens of cranes and through a sort of a global lens of how can we care about broader lands and save our wetlands.
It's pretty cool. The International Crane Foundation, obviously, you are paying attention to what is going on around the world. A lot of organizations kind of don't have that feature.
We do. Like we say, we act locally and we act globally here. We have a lot of membership here in Wisconsin. We know people are very rooted to local wetland issues and conservation issues here. But we do try to tell these broader stories of what's happening around the world. And I think there's lots of good examples where work here has influenced the work abroad and back and forth. And I think water issues and invasive species and fire management related to ecosystems, all good examples of that. We share a lot of things in common in how we're trying to save landscapes. And it's really inspiring to see people working everywhere to try and save their wetlands. I was at a great talk the other day about somebody saying a NIMBY, you know, not in my backyard, has been given a bad name, and we should all be NIMBY people. We should all care about our backyards, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's nice to see people caring like that everywhere. Oh.
Keith and Kiwani, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. I've heard that like Minnesota has already drained or filled in like 90% of their wetlands. Just curious as to what percentage of wetlands do we have in Wisconsin that are still wetlands? And I'll just listen on air.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. I guess we're fortunate compared to some of our neighbors because we've only lost half of our wetlands. States like Illinois have lost dramatically more than that. But it's still half is a lot, and that was 10 million, I believe, was the original acreage. So we're about half of that now. But lots of other changes that have affected the wetlands that remain, just based on watershed hydrology and how invasive species and lots of different things affecting those that are remaining. So big challenges.
And I just see that on our Facebook page. Who was it? Barb sent a nice photo that she took last summer. It's always good to see. This is from the O'Hara River wetland area on County B in Pleasant Springs near Stoughton with a nice crane.
Yeah, very nice crane strolling about there. Yeah.
a very cool picture. And Katie, could you expand a little bit on how the state water laws have changed over the past year? You mentioned that earlier, and one of our callers wondered if...
Sure, and that was a change primarily to the ways that wetlands in particular are regulated, and when a project is proposed that has potential impacts to a wetland, how that's dealt with. And historically, there was an obligation for the DNR to first work with the project proposer to avoid any wetland impacts. Is there a way we could redesign this project to move it over here a little bit or do it on this other lot over here that wouldn't have wetland impacts? Next, if we couldn't avoid impacts, let's minimize them. And then finally, if we couldn't do any of those other things, or as a last resort, we could talk about mitigation. And now mitigation is moved a little bit further up the chain and can now be proposed with the project proposal, saying if we do this project, we're going to mitigate and build, you know, make compensation somewhere else. And we talked earlier in the show about the limitations to that approach, that if you take a wetland out of place A and put it back in place B, it's not going to do the same thing. It's just not going to provide the same services. We just don't know how to do that yet. If
yeah.
ever.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you wonder if we'll ever be able. We're researching it. Is that any research going on?
Well, you can research and talk about some of those things. But as we referenced earlier, sometimes it has to do with the bedrock and what the structure of the bedrock underlying the wetland. And, you know, we don't know. We don't make bedrock yet. We're just not there. So there's conditions on the landscape that have developed over tens of thousands of years and been influenced by glaciation and lots of other factors that we just can't replicate.
Well, we've got... I wanted to mention that you traveled to... we're getting close to the end here. You traveled to Romania.
I did, last summer.
Last summer to accept an award.
And Rich was talking about the ways that local work informs international and vice versa. And one of the reasons that I went to Romania is to accept an award for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association called the Ramsar Wetland Conservation Award for Education. It was the first time any group or organization has gotten that award from the United States. We were very, very proud. And it was for the wetland education and outreach work that we do to promote the value and importance of wetlands in Wisconsin and throughout the country. And it's was held up as a model at that international conference. It was very, very exciting and humbling to represent Wisconsin there.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you've got the conference coming up again.
Yep, February 12th through 14th in Sheboygan at the Blue Harbor Resort. We welcome anybody who'd like to come along. And if you visit our website, wisconsinwetlands.org, you'll find all the information there.
Register right online.
Yep.
And Sheboygan, nice place to be.
Sheboygan's a great place, and it's a remediated brownfield right on the shores of Lake Michigan. So we have a nice view of the lake right from the conference area.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for being with us today. Rich, you're going to give a great talk. I know that.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Rich Belvis is the CEO and president of the International Crane Foundation in Baraboo. One of the featured speakers at the upcoming Wisconsin Wetlands Conference, and of course, Katie Belfast has been with us many times. She's the Outreach Program Director for the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. Great to have them with us. And certainly we're going to not forget about wetlands. We'll be talking about them, and they'll be back, and we'll visit with them again. I don't know about you, but I always learn a lot when I talk with these folks about wetlands. And you know who else I learn a lot from? Well, the weather guys. The weather guys are coming up next. Steve Ackerman, John Martin, tell us what's been going on in Wisconsin weather this month and what might be in store. And maybe we'll even talk about the groundhog. Maybe the groundhog. I'm sure John Martin is an avid watcher of the groundhog. I'm laughing here. between the groundhog and a couple of other publications that he finds a little suspect. We'll visit with him later. Here on the Ideas Network, our Wisconsin weather coming up next.